Christmas to all of the listeners from the Scapones and their Sound Off podcast show. Keep it Ska. Season's greetings to you all.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do? When the then listen to the Scarpone's Sound Off podcast. Pick it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Scarpone's Sound Off podcast episode, I think this is 8, I think. Where's Wheezy? Well, we know where Wheezy is because he's sat in a room in Darlington somewhere. And so here he is. Andy Wheezy's joined us tonight. And how are you doing, Andy?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
All right, all right. We're also joined by fellow Scarpone and four-fingered freak. I don't mean that in a not them four fingers, son. I'm looking at him through Zoom, and I'm getting the old hey. And Mr. Kev Watson, obviously. And Kev, of course, was the first of our Scarpone Sound Off podcast. Went down really well, and he's winning in the download streams, which is unfair. But there we go. That's life.
But anyway, we're just fucking pretty.
That's what it is. You eye candy. You're such eye candy. That's the problem. So, of course, yeah, Andy, and anybody knows Scarpone knows that Andy's been with us on and off for quite some time. He's done a lot of recording with us. He's played a lot of good gigs with us. And he's also quite, although tonight he's really is a punk at heart, as is Kev and people like that. And he's spent a lot of time flirting with the ska scene as well. But we're going to find out now, Andy. So when did it all start for you, Andy? When did all your music affairs start? You know, how old was you? What was the crack?
Right. Well, I say it goes back to 1980, 40 years ago. I was split school. And as I've mentioned on numerous occasions, people, my musical start off kicked off on the toilet. And it's true. And like I said, I don't know whether
it's my in musical influence was the one that started me off was Elvis, and he died on the toilet.
Which is quite ironic because we're talking about toilets.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, this is 3 years after 1977, punk rock goes
to heaven. What's Kev say? Exactly. What are you saying, Kev?
1977, Elvis died on the bog. 1977 will always
punk
be a
rock. It's round and round and round. Anyway, carry on, Andy. Sorry.
But yeah, like I say, I don't know whether it's typically a northern thing or whether it's just a thing that most men do. But we sit on the toilet. We read a book, read a paper, read a comic or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was at that point where I couldn't find anything to read. I was a little bit bored. But then I remembered my sister had an old guitar under her bed. I think she stole it. I don't know where she got it from. It only had one string on it. So I crawled across the landing, if you can imagine that. I'm not trying to put ideas into people's heads. But I was already on the toilet at the time. So, of course, drags his guitar from under the bed. And I'm sat there and I'm just moving my fingers up and down the fretboard.
Yeah.
And the first tune that I played, or I thought I played that I recognised, was Jaws. Theme for Jaws. It's only like two notes. And I thought, Jesus, I can play guitar here, you know. Then I started moving around and I found a few more things here and there. And then I thought, actually, this might be a good idea. I might actually go and buy one of these, you know.
Mm.
And I've been working milk rounds, as we all did as kids, and paper rounds and stuff like that. And I went up to the post office, drew me money out, and went to Williams in the town,
big
music shop. And I bought a bass because it had less strings than a guitar. And I thought, it's bound to be easier to play because, say, there's less strings. And I soldiered on for months and months, not realizing you actually had to tune these things. And every time I played a song, it was in a different place on the guitar neck. It kept on moving around. And I thought this was just perfectly normal. And then somebody says to me, well, if you tune them, then you can play along to like certain songs and that. And this sort of, I thought, that sounds interesting. And I had a trip up to Newcastle with my friend. We went up to watch the game, Newcastle QPR. Newcastle won. Very rare, 2-0 win. The intentions were we're going to buy the songbook for Nevermind the Bollocks.
Oh, right.
More so for the words, because I couldn't read music. I still can't. I still don't do music. And so we couldn't get it. And they had the Clash songbook instead. It's like first album, early singles. And so we bought that. And I was looking at, it had the chords written down as to what was what.
Yeah.
And the simplest one was Police and Thieves, you know, and he had three chords. Yeah. And when I hit, the G string, it matched what was on the record. And I thought, oh, that's unusual, you know. And then I sort of looked into this a little bit and I thought, well, how do you actually go about tuning one of these things? So I'd asked somebody who I knew, and he said, oh, well, that's E, that's A, that's D, that's G, and you tune one off the other. And once I'd seen how you did that, it opened up a whole new world. So I was just listening to records and playing along to them, and that's basically how I learned. And
that's the best. Do you know what? A lot of, especially from the punk era and people like that, and that's what I like about it. You know, it's like the thing about punk was, and any sort of, like, even, you know, ska, whatever, is like when people want to start bands, just starting bands, people just wanting to be bands or start being musicians by just twanging things that makes you, you know, seeing how it works. And, you know, instead of being, you know, let's go to, you know, learn music and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I always find that sort of approach is a natural approach, you know.
Yeah, there was no RADA or any national music conference in my village when I was learning.
So can you read music, Kev?
When I balls.
Look at us three, non-music readers. It's brilliant, this.
I mean, obviously, 40 years later, I know what the notes are, obviously, because I recognise them now.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was just like a different planet, really, to sort of find that if you tuned your guitar, it opened up a whole new world, and you were able to play along to all these songs that you'd never heard before. And I found the easiest ones to start to listen to of all bands was The Police.
I can imagine. Yeah,
and they did some great songs, and I know Sting's a twat. And he's pretentious and all that, but he was a decent bass player. And there's some of the things that they used to do, because it was so prominent in what they played, you could hear it, and you could just play along, and it was easy. And, like, obviously, as I got a little bit better at it, I was able to play along to other stuff and figure out how things went. And it just went from there, and obviously started bands, and things come and go as they do, you know. Like,
what was your first band?
Well, believe it or not, my first band, we didn't sort of get round to having a proper name. And there was me and... There was me and a long-time cohort of mine from school, Max Turnbull, who I eventually went on to play in Last Rough Cars with.
Yeah.
We got this band together, and there was this younger kid at school called Dicko, who apparently was classically trained and could play the guitar.
Right.
What we didn't realise is, he might have had 5 years of classical lessons, but he couldn't actually form a chord, you know, which made for interesting playing. And we used to practice up at the Dog Inn at Heighton. There was a blacksmith shop next door. We used to go and make some noise in there. And my mum had a little mini, and she used to drive me and Dicko up with this one amp that we had between us. And we had one microphone.
Brilliant.
And everything was sort of plugged into this. And we had to unplug the bass so I could sing, because there was only two inputs on the amp.
Yeah.
And we went on for months and months like that, then realised that actually it might be an idea if we actually learned to play. Because we were that bad that we did our own songs, because then nobody could tell us how shit they were, because we did them ourselves. And if they were technically incorrect, didn't fucking matter to us, because these were our songs, and they were terrible. They really were. But over time, things developed, you know.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's what I'm saying. They might have been terrible, but they were the, you know, if you look back now, I think, you know, they were your founded feet, weren't they? You know, your building blocks, you know. Definitely. And without doing that, you know, I mean, that's what I like about the whole music thing. One thing I do like about the punk ethos and the punk ethic was the fact that any common Joe, you didn't have to understand music at all to be started. You just have the passion and the enthusiasm to do it. You know, I love that. Yeah, I just love the DIY approach as well, you know. So, Kev, what was your first band? I can't remember what you said.
My first band was myself, a local farmer called Dick and Green Shields.
Yeah.
Old pal up the road, Davey Scott. And we formed a band called Skullduggery with a K.
Yeah.
And we did a national tour of the field.
I love it.
We started off in what was a byre, and then we went from there to the back of the big house on top of Hurricane, and we played there, and then we moved to the farm building itself, the big barn, which we might get to play there yet. It's massive.
I'm up for that. I'm up for that.
Yeah, we were worse than what Andy's just said.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, has anybody got any old demo tips? We can listen to it and battle it out.
I have, I wouldn't inflict one. But what I discovered at that point was A minor. Through a knackered cab, so it sounded like it was overdriven. It wasn't. It was just a knackered speaker.
Yeah.
And I found that chord, and I was like, oh my God. It was one of those moments, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't even have the luxury of distortion. Like I say, we had this bass amp, and it just sounded like it was just a tuneless racket, you know. And I mean, I can still, it must have impacted on us, because I can still remember the tunes. Yeah. I can still remember the words, and it was so bloody basic that they would be difficult to forget, you know.
Can you remember any? Go on. come on.
You know, there was one of them, it was called Typical Caveman, and it was like three chords. It was like A to C sharp to B to C sharp, something like that.
Yeah.
And the lyrics went, I'm a typical caveman living in my home with no real cares, just eating off the bone. I'm a typical caveman hunting gazelle far across the plains where the animals dwell. And that was it. Repeat that 10 times, and that was the song.
That is a pure punk classic in the making there. By
classic, yeah. Maybe one day I'll actually take that into the studio and just give it the treatment.
As you say, thrash for Carver and do it fast for 3 minutes.
Well, it was as fast as we could play it.
What's that, Kev?
Sounds like it should have a Matt Lads vibe.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
We're doing a bastard every now and then, or a reference to a pie, and you've got a winner.
You have.
Definitely,
you have.
Definitely.
Playing the public psyche, that's what you do, yeah. So when you, what was your first serious, when you, you know, your proper, when you think, you know, this is going to be a go, you know, a goer, or, you know, as music, as in bands and stuff.
Well, it was, obviously Last Rough Cars was my first proper band. And
is that your band? Was that your band, or was it, did you join them, or?
No, it was my, it's my band. Yeah. I started it along with Max, and there'd been a few various lineup changes over the years. I've retired a few times. I've come out of it, and because you know what it's like. Sometimes things just get a bit, you know, you want to do something else, or you just want to put your feet up and get pissed or something, you know.
What's that, Kev? Yeah.
Just leave it for a while.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Let it rest. Yeah. Do something else. Come back to it.
Well, that's it. There's always something crops along. But I mean, I did go through a period at the sort of late 80s into the mid 90s where I wasn't doing a thing. I wasn't doing anything at all. And then all of a sudden, a lot of things came along at the same time. Mm. This is where I first met Mr. Mark Wilson.
Mark Wilson. Yeah.
And
somebody asked her.
Yeah. And I was doing a, I was together with a group of lads, and we used to just make some noise down at Dalton Village Hall on the North Allerton Road.
Yeah.
And we wanted to record what we'd done. And Laz, who was on the drums, it says, oh, well, I know this chap, Mark Wilson, who was in the G-Men. Mm-hmm. I can invite him along. We'll record the session, see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, got chatting to Mark. And we all know what Mark's like. He'd top the hind leg off a donkey when he feels
or like it. Or asleep, depending on which.
It doesn't really matter. He will talk somebody to sleep, or while he's asleep, he can talk somebody to wake them up. Works both ways.
It does.
So we just got chatting. And, I mean, Lace had had a stint in the G-Men, but he wasn't with them at that point.
Right.
And Mark sat and said that they were struggling a little bit with the chap who they had on bass. And I said, I says, well, I'll join in if you want. I says, I've not done anything like ska before. So next thing I know, the big Dins, Andy Dins, is knocking on my door, 6 foot two skinhead, knocking on my door. He says, oh, you want to join the band? I says, yeah, kind of things. And he gave us a tape. He says, oh, well, have a listen to them, see what you think. So I said, oh, okay then. So I had a listen to them, and very unusual for me, I did actually listen to them and learn them, which is quite a rarity.
Yeah.
And then about a couple of days later, he says, oh, we've got a gig in Hartlepool. Do you think you'd be up for it?
Says, as it always is the case,
Absolutely fine, you know. So we go, a couple of weeks later, we go to this dodgy pub in Hartlepool, and we're doing this gig. And Dins was designated driver for the night. I was designated bass player and drinker. And so I'd had a pint.
Sounds like Kev.
Then I had another one, and then I had another one, and Dins is saying to me, he says, are you going to be all right for this? I says, don't you worry about that. I said, absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So So 4 or 5 pints later, we do the gig, and to be fair, it was good. That's how I remember it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just sort of went on from there, and I was sort of in and out of the G-Men for a few years here and there, mm-hmm. and I was also playing with Major Accent as well at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
From the big band,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then but I was actually played guitar for them, which was unusual.
Yeah.
So there's another story. I mean,
where
I used to live. When I first got married, I lived over Winfield area, and Paul Larkin, singer from Major Accent, he lived over the back from us.
Yep.
And I'm stood in the window of the house, strumming away on my guitar. And he gave us a shout, so pops me out the window. He says, do you want to join the band?
Just like that.
Yeah. And I was like, I knew Paul for years. He lived up Branksome.
Yeah.
And I says, well, to do what? He says, well, play guitar. I says, well, have you heard me play guitar? You know, he says, it doesn't matter. He got together with his brother Con and Dave Hammond, the original guitarist, and they said, well, let's get Andy in the band. And they didn't really care whether I could play or not. It mattered to them.
Punk rock.
I'm their guitarist, you know, and it was like all a bit bizarre, and I did a lot of things with them. And obviously, like I say, I drifted in and out a few years. So I got my own band back together.
Yeah.
And then obviously I got involved with the G-Men mm-hmm. as well at the same time. And at one point I was playing in 4 bands in one go, which
indie band.
It was a juggling act really, but it worked.
Yeah, yeah.
What I did worked.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really complain. And it was a case of, I think it was first come, first served. If a gig came in, I would honour it, no matter who.
Yeah.
To say, well, we've got this, and this is better than the one you're doing. I would never dump anybody in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then years and years later, along comes the Scapones, obviously.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop you there because we'll carry that. Well, that's a separate story. So what we'll do is we're going to start with first track. And Kev can have an input here because Kev will know stuff like this. I mean, like we say to everybody every week is that, you know, it's a bit unfair, really. We say, bring in your 4 favourite tracks. And your 4 favourite tracks could probably change every day, couldn't they?
That's what I sent last week.
Yeah.
It'd be totally different to what I've been doing the last
this week. Day. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And like Kevin and everybody else were the same, you know. But this one, the first one, is The Dickies.
Is
it Poodle Party, is it?
Yep. Also known as Doggy Doo.
So, are you a Dickies fan, Kev?
I am indeed. I've seen them about 1,000 times.
Sound like Andy, I think he has as well.
Yeah, great band.
I've played on the same set as them, on the same bill as them a couple of times.
I have done myself.
Brilliant. That's awesome. Right, so what we'll do is we'll play the track, and when we come back, you can tell us why it's one of your favourites. So, right.
Oh, yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Scapone Sound Off podcast. This is Andy Weir's first choice. It's The Dickies and Poodle Party. Poodle Party, Andy Weir's first choice. Andy, what's so special about that track for you?
Well, I think it was the song that changed my how I envisaged music, to be honest. I mean, punk rock was
already around. It's a big thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And my brother, who was a few years older than me, he was hanging around with certain people, and he was bringing these records home. And he brought home Eve of Destruction, and the flip side's Doggy Doo, also known as Poodle Party.
Yeah.
And he put this record on, and it was like over before I could even sort of think about it. And he says, if you think that's fast, listen to this. So he puts on Poodle Party, Doggy Doo, and it was over before, like, I don't even think the needle touched the record and it was off, it finished. And I was like, Jesus, what was that? It was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
So obviously I tried to find out as much as I could about this band, the Dickies. And I remember there used to be a record shop in Cockerton, where there's like pizza houses and the barber's there now. And going past and in the window, they had the Incredible Shrink and Dickies, £2.99 or less on brightly coloured vinyl. And ooh, nice. not that I was ever interested in the colours. So anyway, I get my hands on this record and I put it on and I was like astounded. It was like 29 minutes of just musical like noise, you know, very sort of melodic noise. I mean, I'd heard the Pistols and the Clash and all that, but they didn't quite sort of captivate me like these did. So the album finished and then I put it back on again, and I did that over and over again, and it's such an inspirational kind of record that it sort of opened my eyes to something that I'd quite sort of not really thought about. Like I said, I'd heard all the bands like the Buzzcocks, Pistols, Clash, but this struck a chord, and from then it changed how I listened to things. And now going to other bands like the Pistols and Stiff Little Fingers, bands like that, and like I say, it's just that the Dickies are one of these bands that I mean, obviously you can't really take them seriously. I don't think they've ever done a serious tune, have they?
Kev's laughing.
There is more to the band than just the covers that they're known for, like your Banana Splits. And
well, this is it. People don't tend to. People say, if you let's take Madness for instance, people just think Nightbot Takara One Step Beyond, don't they? Embarrassment Baggage Trousers. But Madness have got some very Madness have got a massive depth, you know, and. They're like a similar, you know, the other end of the coin, the other flip side of the coin, I think. But I understand exactly what you're on about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Madness, again, they were a great band. The sort of musical, sort of, the way they did things was like what no other band was doing at the time.
Yeah.
With, Madness always had a happy-go-lucky kind of feel, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the Specials were a little bit more down-to-earth. They were grittier. Yeah.
Grittier, yeah. Madness, much grittier.
Yeah. Madness were more sort of, you know, let's like the House of Fun and all that kind of, which was great, you know, and it was all sort of good stuff to be listening. It was a good time to be around the late 70s because you had
definitely
punk thing, then you had the ska thing.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say because when it was around originally, 79, was you into it at that time? Because I know Kev, you were into it early. You were into the Special stuff early on, weren't you?
No,
When I heard Too Much Too Young.
That's right,
I didn't know what the lyrics were about.
Yeah.
Didn't understand. Well, yeah, yeah. I just found out when you explained to me last week.
Even I got it wrong.
Yeah.
I do remember at the time there was a lot of controversy about Too Much Too Young.
Yeah, well it was. I mean, you know, even it was even cut short on Top of the Pops because it went to number one, and they cut it short. You know, which is bollocks, isn't it? You know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I do remember seeing the Specials, Gangsters, when they appeared. I think it was the first appearance they did on Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
And it was the way that the band looked
was
what caught my eye, not so much the actual sound.
Mm-hmm.
It was different. I hadn't heard anything close to it. I suppose the closest you could have likened to it was maybe some of the things that the Clash were doing.
Yeah. Well, they were very closely linked, weren't they? They were toured together and everything, you know.
Yeah, they toured together, yeah. And you had this kind of... It was the look that caught my eye there, where they were stood in these suits and like pork pie hats. And obviously
I got this
very big band, black and white. And it was like... Say it was, and it was on a black and white telly as well, because we couldn't afford a colour.
Ooh, even better.
More effective, you know.
Yeah.
Looked more effective. And
I think we were watching Top of the Pops 2 on one of the repeat channels just recently, and it was somewhere in the early 80s, and there was bands like Boney M on there. I forget. Anyway, there's loads of different bands.
Yeah.
And Lisa commented that bands in the 70s and the 80s that were on Top of the Pops were their own style, their own
tradition,
everything else. You look at the pop charts now, and they're all obviously manufactured, or at least have a manufactured look. They've got to have a formula. Set parameters. Whereas them guys never did. And it didn't matter who was on Top of the Pops, they were different. The next act was always different to the one previous.
That was brilliant.
And that's why I think people our age who play music.
It's a unique thing.
It's a unique thing. And it was a unique time. There was a lot of stuff going on, obviously, in the 70s.
Well, that's what I was saying. If you look at the charts on that time, they're so eclectic because you've got punk, you've got ska, you've got disco, you've got folk even, you know, you've got religion, religious, one day at a time.
Amazing.
And, you know, it's absolutely a bit of a clusterfuck, really, when you think about it.
Oh, God, you know, it's all a clusterfuck. We've been doing so well.
It is, exactly.
A lot of those genres fit hand in glove. Punk and ska, for instance, are
very
forever.
Close, yeah.
Obviously, musically, disco isn't the same, but the kind of energy that you'll get from a disco song that you might get from a ska track.
It's all relative. Yeah.
But look at Heart of Glass, but Blondie, that takes its beat straight from a disco beat. At the time, you'd say, not like 78, 79, it was this great song. And obviously, Blondie were part of the punk scene as it was in New York. Yeah. And obviously they became who they were, and there they were. They were mixing like sort of punk and disco together, and it was absolutely fantastic sound. And it's good to have been part of that. I mean, I hated the 80s sound that all the
synthy sort of I'm not a big
I hated all that. Yet now it's like 40 years later.
Yes,
you listen to these tunes and you think yourself, actually, there was some bloody good tunes.
Well, you know, it's funny because I hated New Romantics, hated Spandau Ballet, Duran Duran, the fucking lot, right?
Yeah.
But when you look back, they are guitar based bands, aren't they?
Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
But obviously,
we didn't think about that at the time.
Yeah, I mean, the producers got hold of them and they turned them into these. I mean, Duran Duran, they always had this huge sound. Yet you look at the band itself and you've got like John Taylor, the incredible bass player. And if you strip that away, I mean, Duran Duran, big fans of the Pistols. You can't even hear the songs, but that's what they were listening to.
They just put
a formula that made lots of money, and it would be foolish of them to not do that.
Well, that's,
I've always quite liked Duran Duran. I mean, some of the more popular songs were a bit ropey, like that one they did for James Bond.
I just think sometimes, you know, through the sort of arrogance of youth a bit, you forget about it, don't you? And when you look back with a bit more of a cultured mind, but open mind, cultured mind, whatever you want to call it, you think, you know, what, fucking bass, guitar, drums, you know, compared to the shit you've got now. I listen to the top 40. I keep saying this every week, but I listen to the top 40. And every fucking tune was auto-tuned to death. The whole lot. It was like one continual loop.
One and a half and throw the others away.
Plastic music for the throwaway generations, I call it.
Well, that's it. So, some of this stuff that...
parameters they've got to sit within to sell music in the pop charts.
Yeah.
You know, because
it's quite sad, really.
The studios run the business now, rather than the bands, and this is what we've got.
Uh-huh.
Well, that happened a lot in the early. I remember when we used to go out a lot around the town drinking and all that.
Yeah.
And you'd be out with your mates, and somebody say, "Oh, have you seen the video for such and such?" And I'd be like, "Fuck the video. What's the song like? You know, I'm interested in what the video looks like.
Yeah.
Adam Ant's latest crashing through a bloody window or something like that. What's the song like? Tell me the tune.
Prince,
I'm not really listening to that. You know, I was just watching the video." Like, what was that, Fate to Grace? Somebody gets a tits out. It's like, I'm not fucking.
I missed that. I'm going to watch that later.
I'm sure it's on YouTube these days. One of them was banned back in the day, I think.
Well, I didn't know that.
Very controversial, Fate to Grace. Which some of these videos were. I mean, I think Duran Duran had a few banned as well.
Wait, so what was it called? Was it the Blitz Club in London, wasn't it? I think. Was it the Blitz where all the romantics started? All that sort of Steve Strange and. Soft Cell and all them, all came from, and Duran Duran and the Spandau stuff. I watched actually watched one of his BBC 4 documentaries on it. It was actually quite interesting.
It is, because, I mean, again, it's a time that you look back and you can relate to it because you remember it. You were there.
Yeah.
And you might not have been in London at the time, but you were, whether you liked it or not, you were part of it. It's like, it's just history for us now.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, I remember when a lot of this stuff came out of the late 80s, I can't remember what the hell they call it. It's gone out of my head. But all this stuff like Yaz and things like that. All the house music. All that kind of thing. And what it led to. I remember this was about 10, 15 years ago. Started working at the college. And all we used to get these students come in. We're pre-16 students. And they were listening to New Monkey. And it was like, I thought they were listening to the 330 at Chepstow or something. I thought they had the racing commentary on. I mean, what the fuck's this? It's terrible, you know.
Was it like jungle sort of stuff?
Yeah, it was just like... Yeah, that was it. Did you do it?
I don't have any records. I don't know anything about it.
That's what I'm hearing, and it was like, Jesus Christ, these kids know nothing, you know. And it's still the same. I mean, this is true. I'm sat in a class today.
Yeah.
And one of the things we were talking about was noise. Some L's and C, talking about noise. Obviously passionate about noise because I make noise myself.
Yeah.
And one of the students had said, you're quite into all this, aren't you? I says, well, yeah. I says, it's apart from just coming here and pretending I know what I'm talking about, I go home and I pretend I know what I'm playing, you know, it's like making a lot of noise. And we got on about like hi-fis and things like that. Mm-hmm. And this says to me, what's a hi-fi?
Oh, Christ.
And I was like,
don't do it, Andy. Right. Don't respond.
I would do well to describe what a hi-fi is. And then
I'll put it in a bit
of context.
You're not impressed with your double deck cassette player and your Dolby button.
I didn't get that far because I mentioned obviously vinyl. I says all you young'uns are going out and paying these astronomical costs for vinyl, and this lad says, "Oh, you mean them big CDs?" It's not a fucking CD.
Do you know what, Andy? No disrespect, I picked up that piece of wood you learned with and swiped them with it.
I would have done that, but I was in a classroom. I wasn't in the workshop, otherwise I would have twatted him. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
But it's bizarre perceptions.
It is. What we're going to do now is we're going to play Andy Weir's track number 2. Now, this is interesting, and it's a good choice. It's a fucking fantastic choice, actually, this one. Kev, if you want to interject with something when I mention it, it's The Clash with White Man and Hammersmith. Play.
Oh, absolutely phenomenal.
It's a beauty, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely brilliant.
So we'll play it and then we'll come back and you can tell us all about it.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Scapone, I can't say it, Sound Off podcast. Andy Weir's choice number 2. This is White Man in Hammersmith Pally, The Clash.
I
ladies and gentlemen, Andy chose as number two his track The Clash, White Man in Hammersmith Palette. Andy, what's it all about for you?
Well, again, it goes back to when I was at school. Yeah. And we used to hang around at the youth club, Branksome Youth Club. And somehow I got the dubious task of having to spin the records, play the records on a night time. This is when the it wasn't quite like that, Kev. It wasn't quite like that.
Rewind. Gonna get a rewind.
1974?
This was obviously outside of the discos, which they used to have once a month, and everybody used to get pissed. I'd go in there a couple of nights a week, and I'd be putting records on. And people used to say to me, oh, put this on, put that on, put this on. And it was always like the Jam. Pistols, Specials, The Beat, all sorts of things like that.
Yeah.
And one particular song they kept on asking me to put on was White Man in Hammersmith Palette. And all I sort of heard is like the intro, one, two, three, four. And all of a sudden this big, huge wall of sound blasting out the speakers. And then it sort of all sort of fades out and you've got this sort of reggae beat going on. And at the time, obviously, didn't really have a clue what the song was about.
Yeah.
I don't suppose anybody did back then.
No, no.
But it sort of hit me. I think, what a great song. And I think that was probably a turning point for myself listening to The Clash. Because before, I'd heard the singles, obviously, and I couldn't really get my head around them. But when I heard that, it was a big turning point, as was Bank Robber, which used to get blasted out at the Darlow match. We used to go down the Darlow match.
Do you know what? The Bank Robber dub. Oh. What a track that is. It's unbelievable. Massive.
Great song. And like I say, when we were on about choices, that would have been a choice 3 weeks ago.
It was for me, Andy. Very nearly was for me. It was in the top three.
Great song. And I always just remember going into the Featums at the time, and they would put Bank Robber on, and it sort of became a bit of an anthem for myself.
Mm.
And I think that's pretty much where it came from. I started listening to The Clash, and like I say, London Calling, great album.
Oh, it's a belter.
Enough Rope,
yep.
Brilliant album. Anything after that...
Do you lose faith after that?
Fussed on.
Yeah.
Sandinista was a bit crappy, but some good songs on it, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was no London Calling, that's for sure. But yeah, I think that was it. White Man in Hammersmith Palette, Branksome Youth Club Disco, blast it out, make some noise.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? So, right, we were on about bands and stuff like that. So you mentioned the Scapones there, so...
Yeah.
Go on then, son.
Scapones, yeah. Well, like I said, I played with Mark previously in the G-Men. I've known Mark for a lot of years. And I would say it was roughly about this time, 6 years ago, I think it was.
He
came up to us, he said, we've got a gig in Sheffield.
We've
been a bit caught short.
Can I just say, I actually found that footage this week.
Right.
Yeah, I tell you what, you've shifted some timber since then, lad. Christ. Bloody hell.
Eyes drinking, you know. Well, but, that was the first one I did. And I remember Mark.
Mulby Tavern.
Mulby Tavern, yeah. And he got in touch with us. And he says, we've got this gig in early February. And I said, well, as long as it's not the 13th, I'm absolutely fine, because I was flying off to do a gig in Germany.
That's right.
The week after. So he gives me this CD, and I've still got, I don't think I've got the CD because I'm sure he asked for it back.
Yeah.
But I copied it.
Sounds like
it. It's on my PlayStation. I copied it to the PlayStation. And so I'm sat there when there's nobody in the house listening to these songs on the PlayStation. Then when there's somebody in the house, I've got it on, I've taped it.
Yeah.
And I'm playing it through a tape recorder, through headphones. And it's like a track tape recorder.
Yeah, brilliant.
Bassing as well, so I'd learned these songs, and I don't even think I'd done the gig. And I remember Mark saying, we've got one in Germany. Do you fancy that? And I said,
as you do.
Oh, when's that like? And he says, when's that like? Not that really mattered.
Yeah.
He says, it's in June. It's in June. And he gave us the date. And I remember I had to get special permission to be off work to do it, because it's our final week.
Oh, shit, yeah, of course,
and,
yeah.
And I had to get special permission off the principal to do it.
Yeah.
And there was one in between that I did at Albert Hill Club.
Yeah.
I remember.
That was Steve Cummins' first gig with us, that.
It was. Yeah. So it was to meet Steve for the first time. It was sort of, oh, do you really want to do this? that was Steve. That was the impression he made on people.
It was. I remember being in the toilets during the break, and three lads took uncertain terms to tell me how shit I was. I remember that.
Right. That's really nice of him. Really nice.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Do you remember who they were?
Yeah, I'm past Kevin.
I mean, I do remember them being good gigs. The Sheffield one in particular.
Sheffield was great.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
And the Albert Hill, obviously, it's on your doorstep. Tim
yes, down, so nice and lovely. It was actually, I mean, to be fair, it was actually quite a well-received gig, to be honest.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was all right.
I seem to remember there being a good crowd there.
And yeah, then, yeah, it was packed,
the,
yeah.
The German trip was... and I'd been there before, that yeah. particular to Mainz, courtesy of Herman.
Herman, yeah, job. Lovely fella, yeah.
And we were out there, and I remember it pissed down pretty much the whole weekend.
Buckets, and absolute
the
buckets.
The gig got moved inside, didn't it?
It was gutting that, wasn't it?
And, where was this gig?
I think one of my...
Well, the gig, it was in, it was a place called...
Mainz.
Yeah, was
Mainz
the...
Is Castel.
The place the called Mainz. Yeah, Mainz Castel.
Mainz Castel.
I think you fly into Frankfurt, is that right?
Yeah, we flew into Frankfurt and then we got the training, I remember.
Training, that's right.
And
the trains were on straight, do you remember?
I know we were waiting for a while.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I think the last time I was there, I ended up getting a taxi back to the airport, which cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
But I do remember, like you say, the weather being absolutely appalling.
Oh,
I think
terrible.
We got a little bit of a break on the Sunday night when we all went out into the
yeah.
city in that.
That's right.
And he took us to a Greek restaurant, I think it was.
It was lovely, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
was,
Greek yeah. restaurant, and we were spoon-fed ouzo.
Oh, just a bit.
I think there's big memories.
Kevin's shaking his head.
Okay, no ouzo for Kevsky.
Oh, yeah.
Does it turn you into a raving lunatic?
No, it makes me ill
for tears. Oh, right, that's fair enough.
Well, I remember we ended up going back to the Reduit itself, and there's a bar
yeah.
in the Reduit.
Yeah.
There was only a handful of us. There was obviously me.
Yeah.
Del was there.
Yeah.
I think the Reverend. I don't know whether he collapsed by then. Probably and James, who's been over
James
there a few
Brown,
times
yeah.
with the bands. And we were just pretty much drinking all night.
Yeah.
And the next day, I actually remember... I think you went out and Parky went out
yeah.
and I just had the room to myself and I just spent all day reading the book, which is unusual for me. If he hasn't got pictures, I'm fucked, but I actually read of Mice and Men.
Oh, wow. It's a hell of a book to read. That's heavy going.
Yeah. And I just read it in the whole day because I remember starting to read it at school, but then I got kicked out of English for various whatnots and I never got a chance to finish it. So anyway, I took my son's copy with us and I read it while I was there.
Brilliant.
So there's like certain things that stick in your memory.
Yeah, no surprise.
Beyond that, I didn't do anything for a while
mm-hmm.
with the Scapones. I think it was about a year or two later.
Was it really that long?
Yeah, it was. Mark had got in touch.
Yeah.
And there was some shows coming up. And I think the first one I did was down near Malton somewhere. It was in like a farm shed or something.
Oh, that thing, yeah.
Some kind of festival, yeah.
Beer festival. I mean, obviously when no one turned up.
There's some gigs you remember more than others.
Yeah.
And then obviously from there, I've been involved pretty much on a semi-regular basis.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Got a good few gigs out of it.
You have, yeah. I mean, you know, and you know, we'll always be thankful for you to do that as well, you know, because it certainly makes life easier for us.
Mm.
And it's nice that we can fall back on you in case of times like that. But let's go to another track. We're going to play track 3 now because we can talk a bit more afterwards. Right, Kev, there's one you're going to like as well. This is Stiff Little Fingers because you chose Stiff Little Fingers last time, didn't you? What did you choose last time? Alternative Ulster, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it might have been 9.
It was, yeah. Well, this one's Last Train from the Wasteland.
Oh, yeah, good choice.
Ooh, good choice. So I know you're a big SLF fan, aren't you?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Great song.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
For SLF, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is track 3 from Andy Weir. This is Stiff Little Fingers and Last Train from the Wasteland.
We ride
Is that a track you like, Kev?
It is. I don't think I remember a bad track from those guys.
I think that's a very fair comment, to be fair, that is. Yeah,
I can think of one or two, but I'll say nothing.
No, say it. Tell us.
No, actually, and I would think that Jake Burns would agree with me.
Yeah.
If he was sat there, they did a single called Talk Back, and it was released 1982. It was it appeared on the Now Then album, and it was very much sort of all horns and funky kind of thing, you know.
Was it? Oh, right.
And I remember reading Jake Burns saying that they'd spent an absolute eternity trying to record this song. And at the end of it all, they actually preferred the B-side, which was more what you'd expect from Stiff Little Fingers. And I think he was a little bit disappointed. Just what I was reading. Yeah. And I think he would probably agree with me that it's certainly not one of the best tracks. It's not one of the strongest tracks. There's certainly better songs out there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Last Train from the Wasteland was... I mean, it's quite late on in their career. It was from the Hope Street album.
Yeah, Hope Street. Yeah.
And by then, it was... I can't remember when it was actually released. 99, I think. 1999.
Quite a late one, then, yeah.
So they'd had a long history. Yeah. 22 years. And there was a couple of great songs on that album. They did a cover of You Can Get It If You Really Want It.
Oh, yeah.
Really
yeah.
good. Really, yeah, really yeah. kicked ass.
Yep.
And the standout track for me was Last Train from the Wasteland, and cool. It's very it was a politically motivated song because it drew inspiration from the Good Friday Agreement.
Oh right, Northern obviously. Ireland. Yeah.
And it was a lot about hope and optimism as to what the future might be. And
yeah.
I think since then there's been a few little rumblings lately over there, but mm-hmm. the best part, it's certainly a better place to go to now than it ever was, you know.
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends over there who actually live over there, and they say it's, you know, some of the best times were really, you know, I mean, they've had, it's starting to, what's that, Kev?
Just been on the news today that Boris and the EU boffins have come to an agreement over Northern Ireland, so that's good.
That's a good start, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The rest of it's going to go shit ship.
I know, we know that.
At least we can still fly into Belfast.
It's a hashtag fuck the government.
Got to get that in somewhere.
I've got to get it in, haven't you? Andy, so you played in a lot of bands and you played different genres and stuff like that. So I know with your punk stuff, you've flown all around Europe and stuff like that, haven't you? What sort of countries you played in?
Mainly Germany.
Yeah, big scene.
Mainly Germany. That seems to be where the best sort of places to be, or where the scene is, to be honest. And I played in Brittany, France, Sweden, Italy.
You played there, haven't you, Kev? Fairly recently, I think.
That was very bizarre. The Italy trip. Very bizarre. We flew in. Had some of the week, did the gig, went to bed, then flew home. But I think we were there a total of 11 hours.
But this is it, isn't it? People think, oh, you know, you're like, you know, I mean, let's take the Scapones in the United States. We had probably out of 18 days, I think we were away total, we had about 3 or 4 days free. Mm. And because everything over there is so far away, even in a big city, you've got to travel, you know. I mean, we thought, oh, we'll go to the Whiskey, go early and stuff. When you look at the map, it's an hour and a half still away. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's an hour and a half in the same city, you know.
That's it. I mean, these places are vast, aren't they?
Massive.
You don't seem to appreciate that.
Yeah, and you do, because you fly in, you do, I mean, you know how long it takes to set up and rig in and sound check, and then about, you know. Yeah. And you waste time, and you like you say, normally it's the inside of hotels, trains, and planes, and you're away, aren't you?
That's it. It's a lot of sitting around, a lot of waiting, and you don't really get a chance to see anywhere.
No, which
is more the shame. Which is what was good about the trips to Mainz with the Scapones and the G-Men.
Yeah.
We actually spent 2 or 3 days there.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And we were able to look around and see what was happening around the place, and that was great. And you don't often see that. I mean, you go from city to city to city. And you don't see anything but the roads and the buildings. You don't get a chance to get out and walk around. And I think given the chance, I would have, if I'd have gone somewhere like the States or anywhere really, I would have booked a bit more time around it to have a look around.
And gone for a walk.
and gone for a walk. Yeah, that's another thing. I'm quite well known for my walks.
Is that a pre-gig thing? Is it something to pass the time, or is it something like a ritual?
It's a bit of both, because it was going back to sort of the earlier days, like the punk days. You'd spend more time getting drunk, and by the time you got to that point when you were on stage, you were just, you know.
Right, I've got
some recordings of stuff that I did with, and I won't mention the bands, but they were terrible. And one particular recording, I when I got home, I burnt it just in case anybody got their hands on it. It was that bad. You learn lessons from that.
You do.
And so it became sort of part of my thing was to rather than just sit and drink yourself stupid, especially when people are giving it to you as well, which doesn't help.
No.
Go for a walk somewhere.
And yeah,
there's been some bizarre ones that I've been on. And I remember one particular time we played in Whitehaven
years
back.
Yeah.
And it was sort of late September, I seem to remember.
Yeah.
And I went out for one of my walks. And I walked down to this sort of, that's like a bay seafront thing.
Yeah.
And then I saw a hill and I thought, right, I'm going to go up that hill. And then there was this set of, like, there was like a wooded area. And I thought, well, I'm going to walk in there. But by the time I got to it, it was pitch black. So I'm scrambling through these woods and falling on all sorts and couldn't see where I was going. I was just sort of relying on the street lights in front of us and scrambling over various obstacles. And I mean, I could have, well, anything could have happened. Attacked by wolves, you name it. I could have been, could have fell off a precipice somewhere and ended up in a bloody pit 200 feet wide. And it was such a strange one.
Well, it's funny because that's one of the reasons why we called it, where this episode, Where's Wheezy? Because people would say, Where's Wheezy? I say, he's walking. He's gone.
I always turned up because
you were always there.
Like,
always,
you know, 10, 15 minutes before, would you want? Yeah. Bang, there I am. And I used to time it to perfection.
Suppose, but
that one instance, it was a bit
close to the knuckle.
Couldn't run a ride because he'd get lost. But I think the best one, and Mr. Brown will probably still curse me to the day, was the London trip.
Kevin, listen to this.
Yeah, that was we'd travelled down the night before.
Play the Dublin Castle, weren't we?
Dublin Castle, yeah. And where was it we were at? It was Harrow.
Harrow.
And I had this idea in my head that I was going to walk to the Dublin Castle. And I went on Google Maps, as we do. And it was only 9 miles. That's nothing. So the beers have flown. And yeah, that's all it was on the map. And the beers have flown. And Mr. Brown says to me, he says, do you want some company? I'll come with you. And I was like, are you sure? Because we'd had a few by then. He says, yeah, we'll come. So
what you'd do normally after that?
Yeah, we get up and we go and has our breakfast. So I says, like, are you ready then? So he says, yeah, I'm ready. So we start walking and we ended up at Wembley. Didn't intend to go to Wembley, but we ended up there. So I thought we might as well walk around that.
That's big.
And we started heading away again. And I remember being on Kilburn High Road.
Kilburn High Road,
and I'm looking at my phone. It's tracking how far we've come. And we'd already clocked about 11 miles. And I used to know London quite well. I worked down there for a few years. Anyway, so we get our way to the Dublin Castle, and that's 18 miles later. So we clocked in 18 miles.
18
miles. And Brownie was wanting to go to this saxophone shop.
That's right.
Not too far from the main street. And but we had to go via Boots of Chemist so we could get some plasters for his feet because he's all blistered.
Well, it's funny because I remember when we arrived and we were unloading shit, he came out of the Dublin Castle and he looked like he'd shit himself, he couldn't walk. And I said, what's up with you? That's what I said, he'd been wearing high heels.
But he's never been on a walk since.
I don't understand it. I don't understand it, Andy. I really don't.
I don't get it. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with looking after yourself.
Kev, do you have any pre-gig rituals?
No, I don't.
Is there something? Is there anything you do that's private and personal to yourself that you're going to have to tell us about?
No, I am pretty much one-dimensional creature when it comes to gigs. I get there, I set up, I sound check. Yeah. I have a couple of beers. and I'll take a couple of beers on stage with them. That's all I'll have until after the gig. But sometimes, if it's cold, I'll run through some of the trickier songs just to get the blood flowing to me. I forget where it was. Anyway, it was fucking cold. Where the boxing ring was.
Oh, Red Car. Oh, yeah, it was cold, yeah.
Red Car.
Oh, yes, that's... Yeah, I remember that. I did that one, yeah.
It was the coldest place ever.
It was really cold. we're going to move to the last choice Andy's give us today, although it could be a different choice. I had to read this twice.
Yes, I bet you did.
I said to the wife, is he having a laugh? So, the Dark Punk Lord of Darlington has gone and chosen for track number 4, Robbie... What? Nana Muscuri in my eyes is much better than this fella. But
yeah, I thought you might think that.
This is no, but hey, each to their own, mate. Each to their own. This is Robbie Williams and Come On Done.
Robbie Williams. Yeah.
Fucking hell, I was really shocked by that, but go on. Tell us why.
Tell us why.
Well,
yeah, it's a strange one because I remember
I'll admit that.
When I used to have a real job a long time ago, they used to blast Angels out on the radio work, and I didn't know what it was at the time. I thought it was
which is quite weird. I must admit that's not quite a good track, to be fair.
Yeah, I thought it was I can't even remember the name of the band now, but I thought it was one of these indie bands. And it used to get blasted out, and I remember at the time thinking, like a lot of the songs on the radio, they just got played to death. And you end up resenting them and hating them, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm not really quite sure how, but something must have followed Angels. Yeah. He must have released something. That
yeah, he did quite album. An indie. He did quite an indie style album, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And I remember the wife into Robbie Williams, and we went to see him at Newcastle.
Yeah.
At the arena. And there's always a story behind things I get up to, believe me. So we ended up going, and it was an absolute fantastic night. It really was. I was blown away by how good this he was as an entertainer.
Yeah.
And it was a strange one, because like I say, there's always a tale behind anything that I do. And this night was no exception, because my brother was over in the Lakes, and he was doing like a karate weekend, and he took my kids over there. My son was literally just months old, about 5 months old at the time.
Yeah.
And we'd had tickets for this Robbie Williams. And so they took the kids up for us. And we goes up to this gig, and we comes out of the arena. And obviously we had to drive over to the Lakes that night. And I had this god-awful idea in my head that I'd left the fire on at home. So we had to dash back to Darlington and make sure I hadn't left the fire on. And sure enough, I hadn't. It was all right. Then passed over the 66 to get to where we were stopping over the Lakes.
Yeah.
So we get there about 2 o'clock in the morning, and my brother, fucking hell, I mean, I could have knacked him, but I couldn't because he didn't knock fuck out of us. being the seventh damn black belt.
Didn't he? Yeah, fair enough.
Knocked fuck out of me. So he just dumps the kid on me, and like say Sam, he was literally 5 months old at the time, and we had nothing. And the kid was screaming and bawling. And so I had to get back in the car and find somewhere to get milk. And bear in mind, it's 2 a.m.
Jesus.
So I'm going up and down the motorway to find a service cafe just to get some milk for the kid. By the time I got back, it's close to 5 o'clock in the morning. And by then, Julie's got into sleep. And, 5 o'clock in the morning, we'd had a great night, only for it all to come in tumbling down when we did all this traveling. So anyway, back to Robbie Williams himself.
Yeah.
The song that I picked, Come Undone, was off what I would consider to be probably his best album.
Yeah, it was.
And Escapology it was. And that was when he did Nebworth. We went down to Nebworth, and that was another forgotten day of drinking and doing stuff that we shouldn't.
Festivals tend to be.
But again, yeah, it was a great chance. But like I said, what I like about Robbie Williams, I think he is a great entertainer. I know some people think he's a twat. But I think if we all like the same thing, it'd be quite sad, really.
Well, you know, for all my
that's
ribbon
what makes
of
it unique.
Well, this is it. For all my ribbon of tape, that is he, you know, it's personal choice, you know, and
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. Most of my stuff's mostly jest, but I do fucking hate Gary Barlow. What a cunt. Anyway.
A taxi vading.
Taxi vading Tory cunt is what he is.
Yes, yes, taxi vading Tory cunt, yeah.
Hashtag fuckface. Right, here we go then. This is, for anybody who's listening who likes to hear that, we're not fucking sorry. This is an interesting choice, but here it is Robbie Williams, track number 4 from Maestro Andy Weir's Come Undone. Final Hurlong, and what's your favourite Scapone track?
I would say When It's Gone, It's Gone.
Ooh.
I would say... No,
I think Kev mentioned you liked that one.
I said that.
You did say that. Must be a bassy thing, baby.
Well, it's got a good groove to it, and it's got a
I love that bass bit in the middle.
I think when I first heard it, I'd come down to the practice,
yeah,
and usual to me, I didn't really sort of learn the song. I just listened to what people were doing, and I thought,
I'll go along with it.
Do this, and I started playing it like I did, and I don't play it like Neil played. I don't play it like Kev plays it. I play it as I play it.
Yeah.
And I think I remember Neil took a little bit of inspiration from what I did, and he doubled up on it a little bit to give it a more flow and feel, because the way I played it was more as if I was approaching it with like Rancid in mind, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Rancid did some great tunes. And it was one of them songs that I'd actually regret not playing on and having doing anything on it, because it is a great song. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some great songs.
Yeah, yeah, back. Yeah. No, no, no.
And I think my other favourite was Cost of a Barrel, which
yes.
You need to get that finished. Get it finished.
Well, it's funny because we do have a recorded version of it. I don't think Kev's heard
yeah,
it.
There is. Yeah. Well, I actually played on it.
Have you heard that, Kev?
I've got the bass part for it, but I haven't heard
it. It's a track we sort of recorded and never did anything with it, and we sent it off to a guy in Leicester who works with Linval Golden, and Linval put harmonica on it.
That's right.
Which we still have. And we do want to do something. There is going to be a free giveaway of there's a video on YouTube of us doing it live at a party. And it's been, the audio has been ripped and remastered. So we're going to give that away as like a Christmas present to the website mailing list subscribers this year. So
it is a great song.
It is, it is. And it's poignant. You know, Mark was saying, is it relevant? I said, of course it's relevant.
Of course,
it's about the Manchester Bomb, the Ari Grande concert, isn't it?
Like I say, just because it was so many years ago, doesn't mean it still isn't relevant.
No, absolutely.
I remember discussing it with Mark, and he said pretty much, you know, he felt it was a bit dated. And I'm saying, well, great songs, they don't date.
No.
And I remember, I think it was the first time we played up at Lindisfarne. Mm. And Mark had got this recording with Lindell doing his little bits on.
Yeah.
And it was much more, it was becoming more of a dub sound by the sound from what
I remember. That's the Lindell's producer's input.
Yeah.
He's very regular in dub and stuff.
But it never got finished, which was quite sad. But I remember, obviously, we used to play it live a lot. And that was always a favourite. And again, I think it was one of the early ones that we recorded.
It was the very first one. It was the very first one we ever did.
We did Cost of a Barrel. Mm-hmm. And we did... Cradle to Grave, yeah.
Was that Kev?
And
were we talking about putting that in the set at some point?
Maybe it's something we could do. Yeah.
That's a great song. And I think there might have been something else we did at the same time. So I do remember going in the studio and doing it. I think we might have started recording the album at the time.
Yeah, we had. That's right. We had, yeah.
And there was that, which got left off. And obviously Ghost in Me, which is another favourite. It's odd that that's one song that I've gone back to a few times because I've got the stems for most of the album. I haven't got it all.
Yeah.
And I've got the stems for Do the Dog. A few other things. And recently I was, because I just bought myself some new speakers, I was remixed it on these new speakers, and I've sort of sat there in the front room and sort of the original version, obviously, not the released version.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I say, it was a great, great song. I remember the first time I ever heard it was the demo, which I believe Steve was singing on it.
He was, yeah.
And it was a great tune. And I still think to this day that it should come out in some form.
I'm sure
it was. Because obviously the released version for me is like a, that's what I call like the like a remix kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the original version is what we actually did.
The actual basic recording, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I know there's been some talk on the messenger that it's going to come back into the set. And it is a great song. I think it always goes down well from my memory. And like I said, it's just a few standout songs.
Yeah.
I always remember Tori, when I first heard it, I wasn't overly enamoured about it, but when you're actually playing it, and it takes on a whole new life as a live song.
It's a live belt.
You get that end bit just really sort of kicks in, and you know, it's like it hits you right in the face.
It does.
I mean, to this day, I don't have a clue what it's about. I really don't. You know,
Hashtag fuck the government.
Yeah, she's an old girlfriend, Tori. I don't know.
Tori Spelling.
Could be. yeah, I like that great song tune.
Because it's aggressive, but it's technical.
Yours that, Kev?
I like the song Tory because it's aggressive. Very. And it makes it move, but it's also quite technical.
It is. Yeah, and I said that was proper done as well, because I said to Mark, if you're going to do this, I want it to be aggressive. It needs to be aggressive.
Yeah, it needed to be. And I like the... I'm crap with titles. the one which Dave did, the gangster one.
Cutlass. Captain Cutlass. Yeah, that's got a life of its own as well.
It's a really good one as well. And I do remember... I don't think I played on that one. I'm sure I didn't. I was there.
Yeah, you were there all the time, yeah.
When it was getting done. Yeah. When it was getting done, but I don't think I actually played on it. Because what Mark had done, I thought, well, I can't add to that. That sounds great. It is. So I'll just sit back and listen to it.
Yeah.
And it always seems to me like you're listening to like 60s TV show.
Yeah, do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the Wacky Races.
Wacky Races. Yeah, I thought of it like that. Different light. I'll get off here and I'll be putting Wacky Races on YouTube.
Right,
the song in my head.
Right, chaps. So listen, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but it's been a wonderful experience sharing it with you, mate. Thanks for joining us this evening. Brilliant. Thanks for coming in, Kev.
No problems at all.
What are you drinking, Ness? What are you drinking, Kev?
Isn't it? A bottle of Corona.
Corona.
How appropriate.
Got the super jab. Look.
Well, hey, that's it. You're sorted. Hashtag fuck the government.
Yes, indeed.
Right, listen, boys. Thank you very, very much. And this will be out for Friday night. So I'll send you on the links and stuff. And hope everyone's enjoyed listening to it. And I've gone through the whole fucking band, I think, now. We've got some special guests coming up. We've got Big Fat Panda. We've got King Hammond and stuff coming up towards Christmas. And we've got Paul Ayres as well, our producer. So it's going to be interesting. Right, boys, take it easy, and I'll see you soon. Thanks a lot, chaps.
Have a good evening.
And you'll see you later.
Night.
Ta-da now. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
You're listening to the Scarpones Sound Off podcast. Get some Northeast Scar. Ready to supply.
Attack 22, says the five single.